This is 1360 AM.
WNJC.
Washington Township.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station.
Brought to you
from Forsyth Broadcasting.
Or listen to us at WNJCRadio.com.
All right, welcome. This is your host, Will Hemingway, and you are listening to the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. No tinfoil hats here, no ranting rhetoric, simple, stoic, thoughtful enlightenment on training in risk management, preparedness, and proactive survival. Survival is every day, so live well. The Practice Preparedness Radio Show comes to you live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time on WNJC 1360 AM, South Jersey, Philadelphia. As always, listen to us live on the internet via my website, practicepreparedness.com. We stream every time on TuneIn. Find the link on our website via the Listen Live button, or if you are in the Delaware Valley, you can listen live at 1360 on your AM radio. As always, you can stream the past shows. You will find them archived on the website under show notes or select one from the scrolling list on the website's right column. Thanks for joining us. I am your host, Will Hemingway. I want to stimulate your little gray cells. Let's get started. Today, I want to cover a topic that is rather important to those who like to attend concerts and public events, especially large ones. It really takes some time if you want to do this right in order to guarantee not only your safety and security, but that you enjoy whatever event it is that you go to participate in. So, I want to cover the topic pretty broadly. I actually have a booklet that I have published that is going to be available on the website probably in a few days, and that covers in nth detail all of the information of what you would need in order to prepare to enjoy such an event and do so safely and guarantee the security of yourself and those that you go with. So, let's get into it a bit. In my booklet, I actually cover some pretty significant topics. First of all, you have to understand, as I always tell you, the meaning and the significance of what it is that you're dealing with. So, let's take apart a little bit about what a large crowd is. Many people use crowd and mob synonymously. Really, it is not, and it is not parsing to say that they're not the same thing. A crowd is generally a calm or possibly chaotic moment, but peaceful in nature, where a mob is when the crowd begins to get sucked up into chaotic activities, and it will generally spiral out of control into something that's not really pretty. So, with that in mind, let's take a look at what we do and how we do that. And you begin by understanding the dynamics of a crowd and how a crowd turns into a mob. So, anytime that you're in or surrounded by a large crowd, the risk of threat to your personal safety, security, liberty, and possibly even your life increases dramatically. The number of people will remarkably change the dynamic as to how high the threat is. And unfortunately, we have another dynamic that has grown in importance over the past 15 years or so, and that is one of the threat of terrorism, whether you want to call it homegrown or whatever version you want to call it. Nutbags, nutters who decide that they're going to take the opportunity to take advantage of a large group of people in a very tight area It doesn't take a whole lot to turn happiness and celebration into a train wreck. So one of the key parts to enjoying a large group of people congregating and you being part of it for whatever kind of event it is to remember what I've preached to you over and over again, which is that of situational awareness. There are at least four shows in the archive that I have done on situational awareness. If you're not attuned to this, please go listen to them, especially if you intend to take part in any kind of a rally or an event that's coming up. Please take some time to think it out. Some people think that I overcomplicate these things. I argue that as a trained and experienced risk manager, I simply know that it's not if, it's when, it's not will it, it's how bad will it be. You can change that dynamic. Like I always say, there is no disaster when you're prepared. Unfortunately, you can't help everyone, but you can certainly help yourself. And if you go in a small group or a larger group of your friends and acquaintances, you may be able to positively impact the outcome for them too. So, sociology has taught us that when more than 130 people are in close proximity, there are some unforeseen changes, unexpected to some people, changes in personal and group dynamics. Above 130 people, individual privacy, personal space, and intimate interactions cease to exist. We're not talking 130 people on Earth. We're talking 130 people in close proximity. Those close interactions are supplanted by anonymity, gray man or woman, a diminished empathy for others, and basically dehumanization in people's perspective. Others lose importance to them, and they become more irritating than enjoyable. The danger of the crowd mutating from a crowd into a mob is ever present because the loss of familiarity changes the way that people interact. That change in that perspective often leads to disorganization, chaotic behaviors, and often spirals into violence. As I previously stated, it doesn't matter whether the crowd is there for a parade, a concert, a celebration, mass grieving, or a protest. In the end, it only takes one action, one moment, one mistake, or one overreaction for the crowd to devolve into a mob. So let's talk about for a moment what a mob and a crowd is. A crowd, a group of people attending a public function, an audience, a large number of persons gathered closely together, a throng. No, not a thong, a throng. A mob, on the other hand, is a large group or crowd of people, especially one that is disorderly and intent on causing trouble or violence. Your survival quotient hinges upon your situational awareness. Listen to my shows, attend some of my classes, read my articles on my website here at practicepreparedness.com and over on the primary companion site, practicesurvival.com. I've covered this topic thoroughly. I've also covered it on survivalrisk.com, where I cover all of the threats to your survival in general, which helps you to put together a risk matrix. If you don't know what a risk matrix is, go there and get acquainted with it. It's important to understand. It goes without saying that the best way to survive a crowd, a mob, or a civil unrest is not to be there. In the case that you're unable to avoid it or you're committed to injecting yourself into the situation, there's a laundry list of things that you should consider. You've got to remember, separate yourself from the emotion, hyperbole, ideological, and groupthink as you prepare. You've got to be able to step back, think logically and objectively. There is a myriad of points that you need to consider while preparing for your attendance to an event. And remember that in the end, there is no disaster when you're prepared. You have to do this logically. So let's start with knowing the venue. You've got to get a lay of the land. You have to know where the venue is. If you don't know what a venue is, that's the location of the event. It's different than the event itself. We know that it could be a concert or a political rally, whatever. It could be after some incident that happened, like after 9/11, there were mass grievings. After there's a random shooter, active shooter incident, people gather in large numbers to grieve and such. All these things are the event. We want to know what the venue is first. Long before you get to that event, you should have visited the website of the venue. If it's at a concert hall, at a school, at a sports complex, you should go to that venue's website, print out the evacuation plan. It's almost always there. If not, go to a Ticketmaster or one of the ticket companies that sells tickets for the events and print out the entire floor plan on every level of the location where you're going to be attending. This will give you the opportunity to later print it out and use some Sharpies and mark out the best routes, select where you want to go, and have that with you. Print out a map. Then go to Google and print out Google Maps and find it on the map there. Print out some very close maps with details of streets surrounding the area, giving you a layout. Turn on the topographical map section options of the overlays on the map, so you can see water, hills, high elevations, etc., so that it makes it easier for you to determine where you're going to go, because those things can be challenges. You may see an area you want to go to on the map, but if you don't see that there's water in between, you can't cut across the grass to get there. You're basically running to a dead end. These things count. Save that in PDF form on your smartphone that you carry with you, or tablet, whatever, some kind of a device. In addition, print it out and put that aside for later, as I will explain to you why. Also, save the links directly to the venue map and other information for the area surrounding it in your phone, in an area where you can find them very rapidly. And the other thing is, you need to save the area as an offline area of Google Maps. If you get my booklet, I describe the entire process, complete with an exacting list of what you do in order to be able to save the area offline. That way, if you don't have an internet connection, you can still use your cell phone. The GPS function still works if you need to use a GPS with it, or just a straight up map to save power on your phone. You can still pull it up and we'll still have that map available to you so that you can utilize it to get around. That's critical. If you don't know about saving areas offline, check out my booklet. In addition, you also need to note the local phone numbers for the venue security, for the venue itself. They will have numbers listed. You can find them online, generally on their website. Park police, if it's a public location, find out the phone number for the local park police office in that area, the park patrol. And also the police non-911 emergency numbers for fire, ambulance, etc. You need to have them. Put poison control down and put down one or two local medical facilities, including the addresses, in something so that you can get to them very rapidly. I also like to save them in my contacts, and then I'll normally put into the notes area some common word amongst all of them regarding the venue or the event, so that if I'm there and I just want to type in and search in my contacts, I will find all of the associated ones instantaneously. That's the best bet. I highly recommend that. So that way, if there was a massive event and you need to call for help, you have a number that may work when maybe 911 is overwhelmed. This is important. Saving them in your smartphone is important, but if you lose it, if it gets broken, if it gets stolen from you, you're SOL. So you need to have a hard copy printout of it so that you can have that with you too. That goes with the other sensitive materials for later on. We're going to end up putting them in a quart or a gallon size freezer bag so that you can carry them on you, and no matter whether it rains, snows, ice, whatever, it will still be viable. You also should obtain a very clear list of items that are banned, because these are methods of proactive protection. Find out, are they going to do pat-down searches? Are they going to do magnetrons? That's the metal detector that you walk through like at the airport. Confiscations. Clearly identify what items that you will have normally on you that are not allowed into the venue. Pocket knives, obviously guns, pepper spray, things like that. You would be surprised. Things that you're normally allowed to carry, you will be banned from access with, and you'll either be forced to throw out, give up, surrender, have it confiscated, whatever. This is important. Be prepared so that when you get there, it's a smooth transition in. You don't have to be the one to draw a lot of attention, because you're going to basically paint a circle around your head for the rest of the event, especially if it's a public event or a political event. You have no idea how important that can actually be. If there are any unanswered questions after you've visited the website and the event website about what's banned and what's allowed, contact the venue and find out from them, or contact the event managers and find out from them. Really, really important. If the event and venue are located in an urban environment, city and such, there are also some other things that you should be taking into mind. The prime thing is guaranteeing rapid, simple mobility. If you're allowed to carry larger bags like backpacks or coolers, if you are going with people and they're carrying things, you should seriously consider a strong collapsible hand truck. Even if you get the smallest one, but it has 100, 150 pound capacity and it folds down like you see people use in the city, you can slide it in and strap it on the back of your backpack. It'll act as a backpack rack or something along that line, or strap it to the outside of it, whatever. This way you can, imagine if you had to suddenly trek instead of to your car in the parking lot, or your car's not there at all, and you have to trek 2 miles to the train station to get out because buses are down or roads are blocked. You can hike out, throw your heavy stuff onto the cart and tow it along behind you. Even worse is if you're with other people and they get injured or somehow incapacitated, if they're weak or tired and they can't carry, you're going to be burdened to carry not only your own load, but theirs. These things are critical to think about ahead of time. Of course, they are all controlled and minimized by that of what you were allowed to take in. I highly recommend that you don't use, if you're going to use a cart, do not use bungee cords. Use at least 2 small, lightweight ratchet straps, because they will allow you to move about. They're great for other things. If you need to tie up something, you can even, for instance, make a splint and tie them together with the long ratchet strap itself. Lots of other uses, as you've heard me say thousands of times. The fact of the matter is, if it can't be used for at least 3 things, it really doesn't belong in your kit. Under the idea of getting ready for this, you really need to become aware of what a wrist matrix is. I've talked about this a lot before. You should be aware that under standard risk assessment, which is what real preparedness is all about, your survival depends upon you doing your risk assessments ahead of time, and then in turn, utilizing that so that you can determine what you really need, put it in priority, decide what you can carry, what you can afford, what you can handle, and it then gets adjusted accordingly. So utilize, when you do this, essentially what you do is it gives you a chance to break down both the likelihood and the consequences of incidents that could happen if things go wrong. You start to run down the list of things, whether it's a stampede, a fire, if people run you over, are you going to be hurt? Will you have an injury? How will you get around? These things all come into play. That is critical because as you move along, you're going to need to be able to identify what it is it would require to make you functional again, to keep you from dying, to keep you from bleeding out, to make you comfortable, to keep you from passing out, etc. These things are really critical. I break them down into three different areas of risk. If you get the booklet, you can read all about it. I break it all down. I'm not going to get into the nth details in it. But suffice it to say that in order to be prepared, you also have to recognize that the event and venue both bring in things that alter the risk dynamics. Evaluate the potential for conflict. Are these events regularly, when they occur, do they have people who are taking drugs or alcohol? We can use an example that's pretty obvious. When you go to a concert, this is a common problem. You're probably not going to find that at an Anya concert or going to see Yanni, although I'd have to take drugs just to be able to sit and listen to him. But okay, you know, but alcohol, is it a dry event? Is there alcohol allowed? Are they allowed to bring their own alcohol? Because this is where it really gets out of control. When you have to go pay for it, people limit their consumption based upon the fact that they're spending more for the alcohol than they did for the actual tickets to get into the event. So these things all play a part. Remember, when drugs and alcohol are involved, people's inhibitions and their judgment is clouded, their inhibitions are reduced, so they tend to become much more confrontational, they behave in ways that they normally would not. Public defecation, urination, groping, pushing, fighting, you know, the whole beer balls syndrome, this is what happens. Also, you have to take into consideration the type of event it is. If it's a highly emotionally charged event, believe it or not, I've never understood this, and it's why I have such a problem with it, but sports events are some of the most unbelievable places. People will go to jail fist fighting over something someone else in the audience says at a WWE wrestling event. I mean, really? This is not even real. Come on, get serious. I have seen people fist fight, get arrested, and charged with misdemeanor and felony incidents where they've stabbed people, they've smashed them with a chair, which is considered to be aggravated assault. Their entire life changes over them fighting over some idiotic sports event where the people who they're rooting for wouldn't give them the time of day for $100. It's sad. Concerts are the same way. If someone's a heckler at a political event, it can get pretty brutal. Because people are emotionally charged, because they are ideological things that drive people, and it's like religion, the same thing. People are very close, their raw emotions are very close to the surface. You only have to scratch the skin to get to them when you get into some of these situations and into these topics that will light someone up. At a memorial service, the same thing. Celebrations, people are all stoked and happy, and then something happens and it breaks out because they're probably partying a little bit, even if they're not supposed to, and voila, you have a problem. Once you recognize these facts, then you have to look at who the people are that are commonly attending it. What are they like? Are these people people who are commonly found on Wall Street and drive a Mercedes and get uppity and upset and think it's an affront to their personal liberty when someone in their community paints their front door a different color? Or are these people who live in really rough neighborhoods where them stealing things off of your car while you're sitting at a traffic light is not uncommon? You need to know, because just because you like whoever it is you're going to see or this event, you may not like the people that you're going with. This may play a part in your decision-making process as to whether you're actually going to attend or not, because you really have to be careful about that. I mean, this is critical. So with those things in mind, once you've kind of put them together and scribbled down, you don't have to do this formally. If you get the booklet, you'll find that I have lots of checklists and lots of areas to record these things, so it helps you do that. But once you do that, this will start to bring this together in your mind and change your perception about what you're walking into. I'm not trying to stop you from going if you're dedicated to going. I'm simply saying that if you're going to go, then you need to consider these things in the mix. What are the group dynamics? If you're attending an event and you're going alone or in a small number of people that are very familiar with you, like your family, three people or less, and then I'd consider that you going basically alone, your challenges are completely different than if you're going in a group. As usual, it depends on whether you're in a group who has familiarity, if you have a strong bond like your family, close friends. Most people refer to people as their friends and have no idea what a real friend is about. They can't even spell loyalty. If there's no loyalty, there's no trust and no honor amongst you, then you're basically not going with people that you know. If you have an established trust, or if you're just in a group of acquaintances or unknowns, that changes differently. If you are alone, you have a lot of freedom to move very rapidly. You're not tied to anyone. You don't have an anchor. Remember, it's always you are always at bay to the weakest link in your chain. You cannot pull a tank with a chain if one of the links is damaged and weakened. It doesn't matter how strong the chain should be, it's how strong the weakest link is, and that's the key. If you're alone, you can run, you can go, you can hide, you can duck out, you can be the one to get away. The downside to it is you don't have anyone who's going to witness any situations or corroborate your story if you get into an encounter. That's one. Two, if you're knocked down, there's no one to help you. If you get trampled, there's no one to help you either. And there's no one to act as a second set of eyes and ears either, that you may be distracted and not notice something they may. So know your companions. If you are in a group, especially a sizable group, you need to know who the members of the group are. And if you don't at least know the leaders well, then you really shouldn't be with them. If you have no established trust, then you are worse off than if you were alone. You'll have the feeling of group pressure and restriction of your action, but you won't gain anything in return. The group will restrict your liberty. And remember, freedom and liberty are not the same thing. Go back and listen to a show that I did on these topics. Liberty is either you're incarcerated, you're imprisoned, you're free to, you're not capable of moving on your own, you are chained. Free, on the other hand, are what you utilize when you have liberty. They mean you can do things without any say, you can do things without requirement, that's what you do. If you have freedom, freedoms are a sliding scale. Restriction of action is another thing that comes out of being a member of a group that you are not connected to. Conversely, being a member of a group with a well-established trust and mutual respect and understanding, a team that can work together, then you can be in a very strong position. Unfortunately, once again, it is always only as strong as the weakest link. If you have one person who's not bought in, they will screw it up for all of you. and they can put you at high risk. When you are with that group, well before you get to that place, if you have a 2-hour drive to get there and you're all riding on a bus, don't sit around fiddle farting around playing solitaire or shooting the bull with whoever you're sitting next to. Sit yourself down in an area where you'll have access to the people who are going to be the leaders. While you're with them, very carefully obtain their cell phone numbers, get their full names, and chit-chat them up a little bit to get a feel for who and what they are, so you get a feel whether you want to actually be around them or not. When you do, record their cell phone numbers both in your phone, save them there, and write them down on a pad with a piece of paper that you've brought with you that we will put with those sensitive documents that I keep referring to into a bag that you'll carry with you that is hard copy. Before you go to the event, really skilled, highly experienced group leaders will generally do something in order to have everyone have some shared similarity, a bright colored hat, a bright colored t-shirt with a logo on it, maybe a flag that they have on a stick that they can use, whatever it is that will make you easily identifiable to people who will probably not remember what you look like, but when they see it, they will know that you belong in their group and they will bring you into the fold if you've gotten separated. When you arrive at the location, if you have come on a bus or carpooled with other people, make detailed notes of where your drop point, your landing zone is located. If you have a smartphone with you, turn on before you leave home, actually, you should, utilizing your internet connection, download one of the many applications, the apps that are on there that will help you find your car when you park it. There's tons of them out there. Most of them are free. Download it, get acquainted with it, fiddle around with it at home before you go away. And then when you get there, turn on your GPS, open up that app, and save the location. One of the great program apps that I use for hiking and such is well attributed for that. And whatever it is, you can create a waypoint in it, and you can then use that in order to mark your location of your drop point, which is also known as a rallying point. And then you can use that to find your way back when you're lost. By the way, you may get back there and it's going to look totally different because a lot of the other vehicles are gone. Things have changed, the ground layout, whatever has changed. Maybe it's dark, so forth and so on. My personal preference is an application that will perform well for you in other uses too. That's called MyTrax. It's a freebie. It's great. You can even have it save automatically to the cloud when you put in your locations. You can use it to identify your location there and then turn off the GPS to save your power on your phone for later. Remember, when you're on the ground and you're at an event, you can pretty much cut your usage of your phone power down to nearly nothing by turning off your data and turning off your location capabilities in order to cut down on that burning of the battery. Then you can turn it on once in a while if you need. Don't stand there all day surfing, or you're going to be very sorry at the end of the day when you need to use your phone or a catastrophe happens and you need to use it. So this goes to another area, which is communications. Cell phones, especially smartphones, are really a pain when you get into areas that are big, heavy buildings, high metal content, etc., high concrete and metal. When you get in there, it will block the signal. Some places, some large venues, especially commercial venues, have deals with the cell phone companies who have brought in repeaters so that they act as repeaters to extend and increase a signal. That's all fine and well, but in general, that's not the case. So expect that you may be in a position where you are not going to get a signal. That means you're going to have to leave the venue area, at least to go toward an outer window, in order to get a signal, in order to have communication. That means if you get separated or something happens, you have to make your way there in order to do that. Remember, too, that that's a voice call. Text messaging uses a completely different section of the carrier signal, and it's much more likely that a text message will get through in both directions than will that of a voice call. The voice call needs a sustained circuit. It needs a signal. When a crisis happens, heck, even during Christmas time and some of the big holidays, you will often get a message that says all circuits are busy because the system is just overwhelmed with too many calls all at one time from the local section, and that's a problem. Where text messaging only requires a very short connection of data through SMS, and then that signal is fired through in a burst of data in a second. You can send a text message a page long. So you can actually type out 10 or 12 text messages or send out a text message to 10 or 12 people that you've typed when you have no signal. When you move around or walk into an area where you have a brief signal for a second, it will automatically, if you've already sent it, send out those texts. They'll go, and then as soon as that person comes near a signal that they can get a text signal, they will immediately receive that text, even when they're not able to communicate via voice. This has saved many a life and has helped a lot. One of the other things that you can do is use a third-party application, one that I happen to highly recommend, which is called Signal. And once again, I have a whole write-up about it in the booklet that I have. That is a really wonderful application that if you use a proper, decent, strong passphrases with it, uses end-to-end encryption. It has withstood even the government demands for them to give up data. It is completely encrypted. They don't ever have it, unlike what Apple does, where everything you do goes through their server, and it's not yours under the contract. Anything you do, including your text, all belong to Apple, because if it sits on their server, it's theirs. It's a train wreck. You need to use something that is secure. The other part of it is that Signal will work both to send text using the text capability, and it will also work utilizing the internet connection. And if you are with other people and they also are running Signal, if you can jump Wi-Fi even for a minute, you can ship out a whole pile of text messages via Signal. You can even send video or audio. You can send out you could write a document like a Word doc or something on there and send it out, and it will happen in a burst. It only takes about 30 seconds of connection time and you're back off. That's the kind of really great ability that you can have to make simple communication in order to find someone when you've been lost. By the way, it may not work right away, but the ultimate beauty of the text is that the minute that they get a signal, the minute that the receiver gets a signal, you and they will have completed the communication point. There are some other things you can do too for communications other than telephone. If you are a ham radio operator, if you have your license for amateur radio, you can utilize a 2-meter handheld radio. They don't have a lot. Most of the lower end 2-meter handhelds don't have a very high range. They depend for any further than 7 miles working with a repeater in the city. They tend not to get more than 2 or 3 miles, depending upon the layout of the buildings and where you are. The nice thing is, in a large venue, you're going to have a very big open area, and that will increase your ability to be able to communicate. So if you have a couple of people in your close-knit group that are with you that have a ham radio license, and you have a few handheld 2-meter radios, you can communicate with them. Also, remember that in public events, Aries is typically online. They are a volunteer group utilizing ham radio in order to help out the emergency services in order to maintain communication in large group activities and events. FRS and GMRS radios, which you can find in Walmart and Sam's and whatnot, they're small walkie-talkies. They almost all come with rechargeable batteries. I highly recommend the Midland ones or the high-end Motorola. They all have channel privacy lockouts because you won't be the only one with the radio there. If you don't have a channel privacy lockout ability, you're going to hear everybody's chatter. You're going to get so annoyed, you're going to turn it down or off, and you'll end up missing an important call. But with those radios, they sit idle, they're quiet. If you can find one that has the weather service on it also, then that's the one to get, because if anything really does go to hell in a handbag, the local emergency services will put out an emergency broadcast on there and you will be able to hear it. It doubles up as an emergency radio. Have several rally points laid out. This is something you should really know. Not only do you need to know the primary rally point, which is your zone, your landing zone where your vehicle is that you came in, the bus, your car, whatever, but you also need some other rally points, and you need to choose some that are not on the property, because if something really bad happens and they clear the area, you need one five blocks away, you need one block away, you need one north, south, east, and west. You need to pinpoint them, mark them on the maps, take some street view shots off of Google, print that out, put that in with your important papers in your printouts, because you can have each person have a copy of them and they can rally to that point and wait for everyone else to meet them. That is critical. It can change the game. Now, there's some other things that you have to do too. You have to be aware, you have to take care of your general well-being. General well-being, sustenance, and personal care. When you're getting a large event like this, even when it's really cold outside, you are on your own. So whether it's really hot in the middle of the summer, in the winter, whatever the case may be, weather is not as predictable as people would like. The forecasted temperature may be completely different than what you encounter there. You may get really hot. You may really get really cold. If you came unprepared, you will suffer. So even though I am not a big fan of them in the overall survival picture preparedness side, having a space blanket or two or three, they're very lightweight, they take very little space with you, can be really useful. If you can find for $9, they go roughly around $9, you can get yourself a full-sized 82, 84-inch long by 3 to 4 foot wide space blanket tent. It actually is like a tube. You can get two people, sometimes three people inside of it. If it really started deluging, downpouring, whatever, you could hunker down inside of it if you found yourself a little area that you could sequester yourself to. That's important because you do not want hypothermia. Hyper or hypothermia, it's all the same. You will die. You know that one of the most common problems with that is brain damage. The other part is in this is to consider that you need to have the ability to maintain proper caloric intake and proper hydration. You need to be able to have liquid, clear liquids, not soda. You need to be able to have food, something that will give you sustenance, something with high protein. You need carbs. You need things that will give you sugars and sodium, especially if it's in the summer, all in moderation. Dried nuts, berries, trail mix, things that, by the way, if you make your own, you are more likely to get it into a venue where, like in many commercial venues, they say that you can't bring in food because they're trying to force you to buy from them. you can often get away with it by telling them that you have a massive allergy to whatever, and the only thing you're allowed to do is to eat these things. And if it's not something that's commercially available, then you're likely going to get in with it. The other thing that you need to do, too, is to consider how you're going to have clear liquids. A hydration pack is one way to go, not those crappy ones that go for 10 bucks. You want to get yourself a really good one, one that's going to be easy to maintain and that you've cleaned out and utilized. Because if you ever got a hydration pack and you thought you were just going to pour water in it and head off on the trail and then took your first swig of it and it tasted like plastic, you'll know what I'm talking about. Get yourself a Camelback. Get yourself a good quality, whether it's a Camelback or one of the other brands. Get yourself something that is viable. You know, if you listen to me on the radio regularly, that I've talked about water purification before. You can go listen to my shows about that back in the archives. I highly recommend cutting in. You can go to my store online. You can click on buy here and go there. You'll see that for a very reasonable price, you can buy an inline water filter that will take out pretty much everything. Even if you wanted to put urine in it, you could pretty much, and you could drink it and it will be fine and it won't get you sick and it will have removed toxins and such. And you can get one for about $39 to cut in line into your line for your hydration pack. So you need to figure it out. If you're not going to do that, bring some water bottles. If they won't let you bring that in, then you're going to have to figure something else out, like bring something that you can fill once you get in there, buy a couple of bottles of water and pour them into it so you can have it. Something to that essence, or get some of those clips that hang on your belt that hold a water bottle. Something. You need to guarantee yourself the ability to not only have water with you and carry it, but you need to be able to have something that you can refill if the event comes that you need to be able to do that. One of the other things that you need to seriously consider too is personal hygiene. Hygiene and comfort is your responsibility. If you leave it to others, they will never meet your expectations or your desires. As I say, prepare to care for yourself. That's the fact. That's the rule. I have a checklist. I have a series of lists of things that I highly recommend in the booklet that I think you should consider. And I have a whole list of things about what to carry, carrying essentials that you should bring with you, and even a list of some snivel gear that I think that you should consider in. But remember, if you're going to go to such an event, you've got to do these things for your best interest. You do not want to go expecting to have a good time and have it ruined by the fact that people are ignorant, people are stupid, and that people will inevitably degrade to ruin your time and threaten your survival. This is critical. I can't say it enough. I can't push the point enough. You need to be prepared. So when you're going to go to one of these events, remember that anything that is going to make you stand out is going to bring attention that you may not necessarily want. I'm not telling you don't do it. I'm simply saying if you're going to do it, be smart about it. When you go to one of these events, you should have the ability to become as indescript as possible in an instant. If you're wearing something like a cheese head, or you're wearing a big foam finger on your head, you need to be able to take it off and disappear into the crowd. If you're wearing a bright green hat, because that's what they wanted you to wear so you can be identified by the other people in the group easily, you also want to be able to take that off so you can blend into the crowd. If you're wearing a t-shirt, do you still have a shirt on underneath of it? If you took it off for comfort, did you tuck it in your belt? Did you tie it around your waist so that you had it so that you could change? These are things to think about. The other thing to think about is, when you're there, do you know what to do in order to make your life easier? Do you know things like that it's not uncommon that when you attend an event, that if they have porta potties or if they don't, that the toileting facilities generally are not designed to withstand the capacity of the people who attend, especially a political rally or a protest or something like that. You're basically going to be SOL. When you're in a park, a state or a federal park, they will probably bring in for the event portable toilets, either those porta potties, the standalone singles, or maybe they will bring in the trailers that have it. There are some things to think about. You have no idea how many times I actually Googled it up and found hundreds of people who had talked about having been to concerts and events, being in the porta potty, and some imbeciles flipped it over with them in it. Imagine how screwed your life is if that happens to you. Now, if you can carry a backpack, I highly recommend having a second change of clothing with you. If you can't, you should bring a bag with a second change of clothing, something old you don't care if you lose, and leave it in the whatever conveyance that you took to get there. If you came by bus, leave it on the bus, as long as you know you're going to get back in the same bus. Have an ID tag on it that says this belongs to Joe Blow. That's what you do. Because God forbid, if you were in one of those porta potties and they flipped you over, what are you going to do? You're going to get back on that bus? Can you imagine what your life will be riding home that way? What happens if something happened and you had an accident and you defecated yourself? What are you going to do? Your life sucks. So be prepared. There is no disaster when you're prepared. Some other things to think about is you'll get in there after waiting in a line for 25 minutes, jumping up and down with your knees squeezed together, trying to get into the porta potty. You need a rebreather to be able to stand in it because it smells like death and vomit. And then you find out there's no hand cleaner, no waterless hand cleaner. There's no way to wash your hands. And there's no way to clean up the seat so you can actually sit down. You're now exhausted. You can't play bomb drop, and there's no toilet paper. Now what do you do? Pretty bad. It's pretty sucky. Bring toilet paper. Bring some wet wipes in a bag. Bring some Clorox wipes in a bag. These things change your entire environment, your feeling, and your experience in a blink of an eye. Bring a battery, a backup battery, a big one that you can recharge your phone with. You will look like Batman if you can't have a backpack with you because it's going to be on your back. If you're a woman and they'll allow a person, find out what the biggest one is, and voila, you're the most popular person on the block. If you're a guy and they allow purses in, then you're a merce carrier. That's what happens. Yeah, merce, you know, a man purse. So these are things to consider. If you can carry a purse, then maybe you can get one that has straps, so as soon as you get outside of the venue, you can put the straps over your shoulders and tote it on your back more easily. These are things to consider. A messenger bag may be the ticket. Lots of possibilities, but you have to do your homework. As I said in the outset, you've got to know your venue, you have to know your event, and you have to know what they're published rules are and restrictions as to what you can carry, what you can have with you, what you can bring in so that you don't have it confiscated with you from you when you get there. It's of no value to you. Trust me, they'll never give it back to you. One of the most idiotic things. I think they'd make a fortune if they would have lockers outside of the entrance of the venue, and people would pay $5 for the locker for 5 hours or whatever to toss their stuff they're not allowed to carry in there, take the key and come back and get it on the way out. It's a missed opportunity for them to make money, and it would certainly ease the process of getting people cleared to come in to the venue. That's my take. So lots of other things you can think about, lots and lots, but being able to guarantee yourself mobility also comes with one other caveat. Large events will always have people on staff, on site, from the EMS community who will be there to help you out. That said, you really need to be able to have things to take care of yourself. You should have a mini kit or a mid-size kit on your belt in a cell phone pouch. I make them custom for people. If you're interested, just contact me via the website and I will talk to you in text, email, whatever, about putting together a system for you. They range anywhere from $20 to $50, depending upon what you want and need in it. But I guarantee you with a mini or a maxi kit that you can carry in a smartphone case on your hip, you will have pretty much everything you need in order to take care of yourself in the event that you have a minor injury. That's the game plan. You should have some kind of a mini med kit with you and bring some things, like you should have some ibuprofen if you can take it for reducing swelling. You should bring low-level painkillers. You should have something like a Tylenol or a Motrin in order to handle if you get a fever. And other things along that line, things like Benadryl in case you get stung by a bee or a bug or whatever, and you have some kind of a response. Maybe you ate something and it had peanuts in it, and it turns out that you're allergic to peanuts. You can take a Benadryl, and it will cut the results and negative impact of that and keep you from stopping breathing, which would be nice too, huh? These things are all very simple to do. All you have to do is think about them ahead of time. Take a few of them, two or three, maybe four or five, out of their normal container. Cut them out if they're in a blister pack. Mark on them what they are. Toss them into a baggie, wrap them up, and put them in with what you're going to carry with you. These things make the difference. They will make the difference for you. But they will only make the difference if they're with you. And that's really the bottom line. You've got to pay attention to the details, because as the saying goes, the devil is in the details, and all of your survival has to do with you being situationally aware and being proactive. I can't stress it enough. These events can be life-changing. These events can be life-changing because you can brag to your grandchildren that you were there, like going to Woodstock, or you can lament to your grandchildren about how when you went to Woodstock, you were so stupid that you got sun poisoning and you ended up having to have your nose and ears cut off because you got melanoma. It's all the same thing. It just depends on how you treated it. So having some skills, having some thought, having some proactive preparation, and most importantly, being armed with knowledge. You are going to a place that you likely are not familiar with. You are going with people whom you are not familiar with. Familiarize yourself as much as you can in order to be aware so that you can actually be able to take care of yourself. No surprises. Surprises are bad. Surprises breed fear. Fear breeds emotional response, and emotional responses breed failure. So, in closing, one of the things that I would suggest is if there's been an event like this before, go catch some YouTube videos, scan around in them, and look at the pictures and a video of the audience. Look at the news write-ups to see if there were any negative events and find out what those things were in order to try to get a feel for what you're going to have to do to protect yourself. And with that, I would just say that whether it's this kind of a situation, like an event, a public event in a crowd, or anything that you do day to day, nothing is outside of the realm of preparedness being able to make your life better. This is a way of life, a way of building experience, knowledge, and ability so that you are able to live better, live more happily, live more safely, and with more security. I'm Will Hemingway. This is Practice Preparedness. You can visit us all the time on practicepreparedness.com. Drop me a line. Let me know what you're... And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. I am your host, Will Hemingway. Thank you for spending your time with us today. Don't forget to click the links at the top of practicepreparedness.com, to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and meetup.com. Until next time, please Don't wait until it's too late. Live proactively. Act with purpose every day. Have a plan and practice. Because, as I always say, there is no disaster when you are prepared. We hope that you'll join us next time for the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. Have a good day.